Welcome to Pennsylvania Patriots Radio on News Talk 104.1 and heard around the world on TalkWilliamsport.com. Pennsylvania Patriots Radio is hosted by political media strategist Carlos Saldivia of First Contact and former PA-12 congressional candidate Robert Knorr. Get ready for a dynamic discussion over the next 2 hours on the topics that Pennsylvanians are facing, along with news-making guests and your calls at 570-601-1041. Join us on Twitter and Facebook at Pennsylvania Patriots Radio. Now, here are the hosts of Pennsylvania Patriots Radio, Carlos Saldivia and Robert Knorr.
Well, welcome back. And would you like to introduce our guest, Todd?
Indeed. It's a humbling honor and privilege to introduce the attorney in the state of Pennsylvania that challenged the stay-at-home orders, the business closure orders, all the way to the United States Supreme Court. It's none other than Mark Scaringe, who also hosts the Mark Scaringe Show coming up at 1 o'clock here on News Talk 104.1 at 1600 WEJS. Good Saturday morning and now afternoon to you, Mark Scaringe.
Morning, Todd and Carlos. Nice to be with you guys. And Robert.
Morning.
How are you, Counselor?
I'm very well.
I hear that you're leading, some civil disobedience in Perry County and Dauphin County and Cumberland County.
Well, it started about a week ago. I've been working with a law firm in Pittsburgh, an old friend of mine from Republican Party circles, and they represent a group of counties in southwestern Pennsylvania, Butler, Greene, Washington. Those were the counties, Greene and Washington counties, were the counties of the Whiskey Rebellion.
Yep.
Back in the late 1700s, you historians may recall. Pittsburgh has a history of revolting against tyranny. And that group of counties, along with some elected officials and small business owners, got together and made a more of a county-specific, a regional challenge to the statewide business closure order. They took a lot of the issues that I had addressed, and I sent them all of my pleadings. And they pled those as well, but really it was more of a regional challenge. And they filed that action on Thursday, and they'll be following up in the next couple of days, starting on Monday and Tuesday. And I think it had a big impact on the governor. Obviously, you saw the governor on Friday liberate several of those counties in southwestern Pennsylvania, with the exception of Beaver, which is now in open defiance of the governor, the business closure and stay-at-home order. So, and then you
Can
saw
you do
DAs and sheriffs
on
in various parts of the red zone part of Pennsylvania announced they're just not going to enforce these unconstitutional orders. So it looks like the groundswell is occurring, and you're having a political revolution by local elected officials that we have not witnessed in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania in the history of our great state. So it's a remarkable time to be a Pennsylvanian. You're seeing history unfold right before your very eyes.
Can you do 15 seconds on Beaver County?
What was that?
Can you do 15 seconds on what's going on in Beaver County? Where are they the outlier?
Well, Beaver County has a real problem in its nursing homes. One of the nursing homes in particular has been devastated by COVID-19. And we have argued in the pleadings we filed in the United States Supreme Court, and we'll continue that argument in other courts to be announced shortly, that it is Secretary of Health Rachel Levine's policy of compelling nursing homes to accept patients released recently from hospitals who have or had COVID-19 back into the nursing homes has been disastrous for the residents there. It has spread COVID-19 like wildfire and has resulted in so many deaths in our nursing homes. That's where the problem is. in southeastern Pennsylvania, which is still under shutdown and lockdown, 85% of the deaths have occurred in our nursing homes. Those nursing homes are regulated by the governor and the Secretary of Health. They're in charge of the health and safety of the residents in those nursing homes, and their policies are contributing to the death of so many of those residents. It's horrible. It's horrifying to see bad government decisions actually causing physical harm and death to Pennsylvanians.
Rob?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think that's something we'll be talking about more as we go on this hour. One of the questions, just while we have you here, that I wanted to ask from a legal perspective, can you tell us what is even the governor's argument of why he has the authority to override the Constitution? Are they pointing to something in the Constitution where they say, well, this provision theoretically gives us the right to strip you of your Bill of Rights protections? Or do you know what their argument's going to be?
Oh, yeah, I've been litigating against those arguments for a month and a half. They cite the Pennsylvania Constitution in some very broad sections, that, and they're citing this inherent power as the chief executive, as opposed to express power in the Constitution. But the Pennsylvania Constitution clearly does not authorize what they've done, so they haven't really focused on that. They've focused on two statutes, the Emergency Management Services Code and the Disease Prevention and Control Law. And the code is for disasters, hurricanes, floods, earthquakes, explosions. It allows the governor to see a disaster, label it a disaster area, and then stop people from coming in and out of it. So if the city of Williamsport is flooded and it's a serious danger, the governor can say, no, you can't go in. We have emergency crew going in to rescue. We're keeping the people out. That's what that statute is designed for. The governor has used an extremely broad interpretation of that to include viral illnesses. Now, it's the Disease Prevention and Control Law that is expressly designed to empower the local health agencies and also the Secretary of Health to combat the spread of viral illnesses, which is what communicable diseases, which is what COVID-19 is. That's the statute that should be used, but that limits their power to quarantine and isolation of individuals who are infected with the illness or who have likely been exposed to it, and it only applies to persons. It doesn't apply to a business, and right. So that's why they're not really following it, because they can't. And plus, those persons have something called due process rights to object to being locked down in their home, whereas none of that has occurred. And so it's really under the code where they're just using this amazingly expansive interpretation of that. It's a square peg in a round hole. We've made that argument through the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. Pennsylvania Supreme Court didn't care, and that was that.
Mark, I know you got to go because your show's coming up at the top of the hour. Who do you have today? What will you be talking about on your show coming up at the top of the hour?
Well, it's just me today, and we'll be talking about the latest developments in our case, some legal maneuverings that we're about to engage in very, very soon in some different courts with some different plaintiffs. And also, we're going to talk about this phenomena of elected officials in open defiance of the governor's orders, calling them unconstitutional and unenforceable. It is truly, as I said earlier, a remarkable time that we're living in. You've got to go back to when Pennsylvania elected officials refused to enforce the Fugitive Slave Acts and refused to capture fugitive slaves from the southern states and return them to have somewhat of a similar experience. But that was so limited. That was so isolated. This is massive. These are leaders of counties saying we're not enforcing these orders. This is historical, and that's what we're going to be talking about today at 1 o'clock.
I did want to follow up one thing real quick, and I know Carlos has one other follow-up as well. In regard to the Supreme Court case that they basically kicked back, are you appealing that to one of the appellate courts to go back to the Supremes, or is that kind of why you're moving to a different venue?
Well, you can't appeal the United States Supreme Court. The only way to appeal the United States Supreme Court is to go to the people. And you're seeing the people rising up across Pennsylvania. But the United States Supreme Court denied only one of our applications, which was an emergency application asking the United States Supreme Court to stay or stop or enjoin, prohibit the governor from enforcing his orders. In order to convince the court to do that, you need, it's an extremely high burden to satisfy. But we tried and mm-hmm. we failed. But the larger overall appeal is still pending. And the governor's briefs are due, I believe, June 4th. And so at some point after that, the court will decide whether or not to accept our appeal. If they do, then there'll be then they'll do briefing on it. But that's not going to get us out of the situation that we're in today, which is why we're going to be taking some other steps in court very, very soon that we'll announce when that occurs.
I love that you tried. And that leads me into the next question. My only question. Why is it that politicians who put their hand on the Bible and swear to uphold and protect the Constitution, when things like this come up, don't make their decisions through the very first lens of what they should be doing, and that is the lens of the Bill of Rights and the Constitution? That should be the very first lens. And I punctuate this by telling you that an official in Lycoming County yesterday told us that there was arguments amongst the Lycoming County hierarchy with respect to what to do next because there was, quote, no baseline, unquote, for what we're doing with regards to how to handle the crisis. But I'm going to push back, Counselor. I'm going to push back and say that there is a baseline, and the baseline is the Bill of Rights and the Constitution. The civil disobedience that's happening now didn't come from the top. The civil disobedience came from the people. No?
Oh, absolutely. We've been holding rallies across Pennsylvania. I've spoken at two of them. On a few occasions, we had elected officials from the General Assembly, but we didn't have actual officials who were in governing capacities in the executive branches of counties and municipalities. That was then, this is now. Carlos, you're right. The people have risen, and their elected officials are responding to the people. And that's when politicians act. They rarely act on their own. They only act often when they're moved by the mass of the people, and that's what you're seeing here today. And regrettably, our Constitution, Pennsylvania Constitution, the United States Constitution, have been suspended in Pennsylvania. There's no question about that. No reasonable person could conclude that we have our constitutional rights at this time when we're compelled to stay in our homes, when we can't go to our businesses. It's absurd. There's no historical legal precedence for it. Yet, you know, our elected officials are, quote, leaders. They react out of emotion and hysteria and paranoia. So they shut everything down. It's not based on reason or rationality or the law, certainly, but that's the way human nature is. Some of us, like those four of us here, immediately reacted differently. We reacted based on reason, rationality, and the law from day one, and that's the way I'm sure we'll continue to respond to this.
Yep. A quick follow-up, and then we'll let you go. How many, given that you are likely, for my money, the most notable attorney that deals in government and elections, how many Pennsylvania state politicians rang you for your counsel and how to handle this? How many leaders called you, elected officials, asking for counsel as to what to do?
Zero. But that I got some attaboys along the way. Keep up the good work. I hope you don't get your head chopped off, but keep up the fight. But no, Carlos, our elected officials immediately just deferred to the governor and were supplicants to him. We independent citizens of Pennsylvania are not. And so although we are shut down, shut out of our businesses and our homes, we fought back in the way that we could through the courts and came up empty at the PA Supreme Court. And we were fighting back on the streets.
Carlos, I'm reclaiming my time. You've already asked him four other follow-up questions. He has a show to do, man. Come on.
Ask him what he tells the people of Pennsylvania. What would you say to them?
To resist. I mean, this is the time of the resistance.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mark Scaringi, you have a show at 1 o'clock. We are thrilled to carry it through this pandemic and beyond. You have been on the front line. You are trying to get in front of the Supreme Court for oral arguments. As you mentioned, the brief on your side has been filed. You're waiting on the governor to file his answer by the 4th of June. Wish you nothing but the best in this continued fight for the rights of Pennsylvanians.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Godspeed, Mike.
Thank you.
That's Mark Scaringi, everybody, attorney. He is on the radio coming up at the top of the hour. We certainly appreciate his time, as always, and he's very kind with it and very generous with it as well.
So, yeah, I thought that there's a lot of things to unpack that was going there. I think that the first thing that we should talk about is this idea of nursing homes. And, Carlos, in my conversation with you yesterday, we had hit on this the last time we were on the show here with Todd, which is the idea that the way to approach this virus would have been through a triage system where we put our resources where they could most effectively save lives and do the most good. And we knew that at the time, the most vulnerable population.
Can you talk about what triage is, Robert?
Hey, before you get there, before you get there, we just had breaking news. Got another phone call. It was from Bob and Laura Sun Gazette. Who's Mark Scaringi? What's the Supreme Court? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. What? But
can you
Constitution.
Tell us what triage is?
No, triage is, the idea of triage is this, that you look at several emergencies or you look at several issues that could negatively affect you and you deal with them based in the order of the most significant first. So, for example, anyone who's ever been a parent or if you've been in a position of leadership in a business or you were in the military, you understand this concept of there's a lot of things that could go wrong, but you deal with the most important things first. So when we're talking about triaging our response to a virus, you look at the people that are the most vulnerable or where the most negative impacts could happen, and you deal with them first. And we knew from the outset that the most vulnerable populations were elderly people, people with pre-existing conditions, and in particular, people in long-term care facilities. And so tragically, what we're seeing happen is the numbers come out, and not just in Pennsylvania, but actually all around the country and all around the world, is that as many as 50% and even higher of the people that are passing away are in these sorts of nursing home facilities or long-term care facilities. So what we could have done was let people go to work, not strip people of their rights, and use the resources and the productivity of the people in the economy that was continuing to work to be able to direct those resources to nursing homes, to people that were vulnerable populations, to make sure that they were not only getting proper beds, proper isolation, proper ventilators and medication, proper testing, but to also make sure that they were getting the emotional support and the idea that we had their interests looked at first and foremost. That's what that would have allowed us to do. Instead, what we did was we had a one-size-fits-all approach that defaulted without they ever having proof that it was going to be as catastrophic as what they said. We defaulted to taking people's rights away and collapsing the economy. And then we put resources into doing things like sending police to harass people that are walking in the park, shutting down schools when we know that young people actually, from the populations of 0 to 17, according to the CDC's own numbers, the virus is less infectious and less deadly than the flu to the population of 0 to 17. And so we did all of this business just as a power grab to harass normal Americans. And what they did in conjunction with that was not only not send resources to places like nursing home, but they actually gave a death sentence, like Mark was saying, to these nursing homes. And when we get to in a minute here, I could actually read a letter, portions of a letter from a doctor that shows that the Department of Health in Pennsylvania basically told nursing homes, don't send your sick COVID patients here. Keep them here. Medicare will pay you four times as much for keeping them in the nursing home. And they knew that that would lead to the spread of the illness in these nursing homes, but it was worth it to them for whatever reason. So actually, the very people that said, if you don't listen to us, you want people to die, their policies are actually killing people. And oh, by the way, those deaths, those populations that are dying, that's over 50% of the deaths.
Robert and Carlos,
Robert,
if I may.
Before,
go ahead, Carlos.
Go ahead, before I throw this back to Todd, because I want to get his take on it, can you explain to people why these people that are elderly, can you explain to them what comorbidities do and why that affects their immune system to make them more vulnerable to COVID-19?
Right.
Why is it that these older people are getting sick and dying? And explain what a comorbidity is and explain how that in context has affected them, as opposed to just saying, well, they're old people. And then
right.
If we could go to Todd for his take on this.
Yeah. So real quick, a comorbidity is other health issues you have that would compound then another issue that comes in, and it kind of right. exponentially makes all of those health issues worse. It compounds them. So the easiest example to look at this would look at something that's an immune deficiency disease like HIV or something like that. You don't usually die of HIV. What happens is that illness compromises your immune system, and then something like pneumonia or the flu or a common cold or something like that comes along and your body can't fight that off. That's exactly
right.
what we're seeing with these elderly populations.
Right.
It's not that COVID's so lethal, that's why it's killing them. It's COVID has a mortality rate, but it's going to affect and kill people that's bodies are already trying to fight off other illnesses. And so this is kind of the straw that breaks the camel's back. And we can see
right.
with younger people that this isn't very lethal at all. Again, over 50% of deaths in most states come from these populations of people that are, I think the average age of death in the United States is 79 years old with at least two comorbidities or two other illnesses. So those, if you're,
right.
that's the population that you should have been looking first and foremost. What can we do to keep these people safe? And instead they were
right.
put
comorbidities,
on the
back. Comorbidities in terms of, as an example, diabetes.
Yes.
COPD, lung cancer, and any of these things that would then hasten the immune system to not be able to battle those things on top of the COVID-19.
Right, exactly.
Todd.
Yes.
You just felt like saying your name.
your take on this, given that you have been the head of the spear in Pennsylvania with respect to the communications that you've had with the governor and the secretary, Secretary Levine, can you talk about the journey of the questions that you've asked and what your thoughts are based on the things that you asked them and how they responded? And then can you enjoin what Coroner Kiesling did here in Lycoming County at the end?
Okay, and then I will buttress my response with the actual words of the secretary from the last 48 hours in response to one of my many questions. How about that?
Awesome.
Okay.
Perfect.
So being the grandson, and my grandpa on my dad's side's passed away in the last 10 years, okay? And then, of course, my dad's a funeral director, longtime paramedic, so that was the upbringing, the youth, the adolescence. So I was around ambulances and funerals basically my entire life, right? So that is the backdrop that I use going into the COVID-19 pandemic. My grandfather was one of the first people on the DMORT team, which is the disaster mortuary team. So if you have a pandemic like this and you see what's going on in New York, my grandfather would have been one of those people in the spacesuits dealing with the deceased. You with me so far?
Yep.
Okay.
Correct.
So I've known coroners my whole life. I've known health department people my whole life. I understand the whole process, okay? If I have questions, I'm going to reveal a source for the first time in history, ladies and gentlemen.
Uh-oh.
I'm going against media things right now. My dad. Oh, my. Mind blown. Right? He has been such a wealth of information for me dealing with this in his daily life, in what he does as a funeral director, and he's just a phenomenal resource on top of being my dad. You with me so far?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So when these numbers come out, I'm very skeptical, right? Because if you test positive for COVID, I get it. You can recover at home. You may end up in the hospital. You may end up on a ventilator. And as we've seen, the ventilator is not the best thing for COVID-19 patients. We all would agree on that?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a death sentence, basically.
Correct. Yes. Yeah, so I have great empathy for those that are in nursing homes because, as Robert, as you eloquently put earlier, they are in a compromised position to begin with. Okay. So we have two deaths reported weeks ago in Lycoming County on the death count. Again, as Carlos mentioned, being the tip of the spear, being the only journalist here in Williamsport, Lycoming County, I pick up the phone and call the coroner. He's the guy that certifies if you're dead or not in Lycoming County. Normally signs off on the death certificate. That's normal standard practice, right? He had no idea what I was talking about. My longtime friend Chuck, he said, "What are you talking about, man?" I said, "There's two deaths on the list." So he began to research it. I began to research it. Calls back, says, "There aren't two deaths. They've misattributed those." And it led to more than 200 deaths coming off the list within 48 hours because of our reporting. Are you
with me so far? It was 11% of the total deaths at the time
and
that they had to take up. And my question is, because we had, again, I ask people to judge for themselves. Are you happy with what you see of the average media person when it comes to covering this story? I think any objective person would say no. So because we were lucky to have someone like you, Todd, that did your job as a journalist, that resulted in the one time that happens, 11% of the state numbers have to come off. What if we had a journalist like you in every county? How many deaths are being inflated because we don't have media people doing their job and these numbers are just being slid in? And how is, when we look at places like New York City, where the majority of these deaths are coming from, all it would take would be one coroner. I'm not going to allege they're corrupt, but maybe just not paying attention to what the governor's numbers are, what the state's numbers totally are. Because, you know, if you're a coroner in New York City, you probably have your hands full right now. So all it takes is a mistake or an oversight to see the amount of these deaths being inflated. Now, this illustrates, one, why we are so skeptical of the numbers that they're issuing, but second, the importance of having journalists and people that are approaching this objectively. Instead, we see the majority of reporters are putting this, or have a dog in the fight. They want to push these numbers. They want to use this story to hurt their political opponents or something like that.
Exactly. And
that's one of the big tragedies I think we see of this. We can't have people as informed as they should be because people at every position, whether it be the media or in leadership, are letting us down and not being transparent.
Robert, keep the 11% in your mind for just a moment. We're going to come back to it here in just a second. So with the backdrop of my assertion that the death number is immeasurably inflated for numbers of reasons. We'll get into that in reaction.
Yep.
What my hypothesis and assertion to you is, here in Williamsport and Lycoming County, hear me, ladies and gentlemen. The deaths that are being attributed to COVID-19 are being inflated, period. And here's why. The actual number of people that catch COVID-19 and pass away from it is 11%. It was in a letter sent by Representative Speaker of the House Terzai earlier this week, provided by Secretary Levine. With that as the backdrop, here's what I asked earlier this week over the last 48 hours.
From News Talk 104.1, yesterday, you provided legislative leaders details on COVID-19 cases, including 84.4% of the 3,106 deaths had at least one and as many as four comorbid conditions at the time of death. Is it fair to say that those people died of something else and tested positive or were probable for COVID-19?
No. What we're saying in terms of that data that we provided to the legislative leaders upon their request was that it is very clear that seniors are most at risk of getting COVID-19 and having a very serious case of COVID-19, possibly leading to death. And those with comorbid conditions with other types of medical conditions are even more at risk of contracting COVID-19 or having a very serious case and tragically passing away. So that includes those comorbid conditions can include heart disease. An example would be congestive heart failure. That it can include, include uncontrolled hypertension. We're also talking about chronic lung disease, such as chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. That includes chronic bronchitis and emphysema. Chronic kidney disease, so those type of conditions. Some seniors might have one of those conditions. It's not uncommon to have multiple of those conditions, and that forms the basis of the data that we shared with the legislature.
Okay, so right there, she contradicted herself in the same 90-second quote.
She started with no, and then said, Carlos and Todd and Robert, you're right.
Did I get it right? Yes. Now stay tuned.
Am I doing this right?
I have a story that's going to be posted tomorrow on TalkWilliamsport.com that addresses this very quote and this very situation. I'm here to tell you right now, that number, and Robert, you mentioned it earlier, what's the death count today? Almost 3,700? Let's just round it up to 3,700. 370 people have actually contracted and died of COVID-19. Zero comorbidity. COVID-19's not killing these people with 0 to 4 comorbidities. It's exacerbating the situation that they already are dealing
with.
For political gain. That's exactly right.
Yeah, and, the way to look at this, if you're thinking, well, this sounds complicated, ask yourself this. Is this how we would treat another disease if we weren't making a political story out of it? So if these people have these comorbidities and they get the flu in another time, are we saying, oh, the flu killed all of these people in the nursing homes? No, of course not. Right. We're saying they had chronic emphysema. They had COPD. They had chronic heart failure and things like that. That's what they're putting is the cause of death. And this isn't just Pennsylvania, by the way.
Because
we've heard reports from Dr. Birx and Dr. Fauci at the federal level saying that they've instructed people, instructed coroners and others that are putting down causes of deaths, that they should assume that if COVID was there, that they should list that as a cause of death. Then when you add in, we're giving federal dollars to people and to hospitals that are dealing with the COVID crisis more. Now you've set the situation where these hospitals and facilities have an incentive to say COVID was the cause of death. I mean, if you're a doctor and you're in a hospital that's possibly struggling financially at this point, which again, that's another thing we can talk about. Hospitals all over the country are now furloughing employees. So if you're struggling and you know one of the ways you could help your hospital is to say, look, I think this person had COVID-type symptoms, but I'm not certain that that was the cause of death. But if I put that it was the cause of death, then our hospital stands to financially gain. How many times are those numbers then being, massaged like that?
Robert, to your point, this is exactly why Chuck Kiesling, as the president of the Coroners Association, has been very outspoken. And I'm not saying the two deaths misattributed to Lycoming County lit the fire, but I'm here to tell you, it might have set off the firecracker. Because
he's
livid.
He's livid. There's no question about it.
And they're not allowing coroners. They're not allowing coroners to certify the dead that are attributed to COVID-19. Do you know why they're not letting that happen? In my humble opinion, because those coroners are going to say that person did not die of COVID-19.
Right.
Exactly right. Right. Because we can't trust them to outline the outcomes that we want.
Gee, wait a minute. Didn't you just say that in the first hour?
There's 67 of them.
Didn't you say that in the first hour that a predetermined outcome was there in a Myrtle Beach case, and now we're taking it to one other level of COVID-19?
I might or might not have said that, but there's 67 people that we have to wrangle. So the best way to wrangle 67 people is to not have them be part of the equation. Listen, I'm not an expert in math, but I know my way around, fractions. And if you have certain things that are not part of the equation, you don't have to deal with them. It's 12:38. Todd, give me your two-minute roundup on your thoughts on the state and federal response to the flu. And then you, Robert, and then I will give you 2 minutes, and then we could move on to a couple of national stories that I'd like to cover.
On the response to the flu or this pandemic?
The pandemic.
Okay.
Yes. Sorry.
So
The virus.
Okay. So let me back you, and I'm going to use flu as an example. We didn't shut this country down over H1N1. And it was exponentially worse than what's going on right now. And again, any life that is lost in this pandemic, I get it. And what they said yesterday was there have been 9 suicides in Lycoming County since the beginning of the year. We have 4 deaths attributed to COVID-19. So suicides are outpacing COVID by a factor of 2. Because the economy got shut down for 370 people. How many million in Pennsylvania swamped the unemployment system? What are you guys doing? Because the model of University of Washington, which has been completely debunked, was used to put everybody back in their homes. We're wearing masks. I got news for you. Guess what's going to happen over the next 90, 120, 180 days? Do you understand the respiratory issues that are going to be going to the doctor's office or telemedicine situations because of respiratory issues caused by wearing a freaking mask?
Yep.
There are people driving around in their cars wearing a mask. Take it off when you're driving because you're going to pass out.
Right.
Absolutely.
Especially in N95. I got a tragic story for you. We have a family friend real quick in Ohio, okay, whose grandmother was going to the doctor. They wore N95, tight N95 masks. The grandmother was sitting in the passenger seat. The driver was wearing an N95. They went in to get the wheelchair to bring grandma in, who had really no respiratory issues or breathing issues, going to the doctor previous to what is going to be told to you right now. They no sooner went into the doctor, came back out with the wheelchair to get her out of the car. She was dead. Wearing an N95 mask. They're waiting on the official cause of death to come back. But I got to tell you, the N95, in some situations, impairs your breathing. Because you're recycling your same air that would you would normally be expelling that. You're trapping it.
Yeah.
She's dead.
Yeah. How old was she?
She was older. I'm not going to get into ages because then you can go look it up online. I'm not going to get into ages. She was older. She was older
not
than Robert, you, and me. I'll put it to you that way. And she was of grandma stature.
Yeah.
Right. So how about you, Robert? Your 2 minutes on your thoughts, or your roundup on the virus.
Right. So real quick, let me just say about I think we should all question why when Todd about 4 weeks ago and 104.1 asked Governor Wolf's team why they are what would they tell someone in Lycoming County or Sullivan County where there were very few cases of COVID, why those businesses should be shut down. The response that was given was, oh, it's because their virus is already there and asymptomatic people are carrying it. And so therefore, we can't alleviate the shutdown. Then in a span of 4 days, Governor Wolf comes out and once more reverses course and says, oh, we're going to do a county by county relaxing of these restrictions. Further proving that what was the science that changed? How did it change from 4 days, no, we can't do that, to all of a sudden, oh, yeah, that's exactly what we're going to do. Furthermore, the fact that they're going and putting us into the yellow phase proves the absurdity of this lockdown strategy in the first place. The lockdown wouldn't have been effective, but the only chance it had to be effective was doing a complete and thorough lockdown. Can someone explain to me why, well, you can all go back to work, but you can't go to a restaurant? How is that going to help anything whatsoever? If the virus is contagious, then why, like, for example, they say we can't have groups of more than 25. So what? Instead of a group of 50, we'll have 2 groups of 25? How does that solve the problem? All you're doing is infringing on people's rights, and you're crushing the economy in half measures that won't have any positive effect whatsoever.
Stay
That's
6 feet apart.
I just wanted to say real quick.
Stay is, 6 feet apart from me, Robert.
Go ahead.
In your group of 25, stay 6 feet apart. In your group of 25.
Right. And wear your mask, you know, then you'll be okay. My wife works at a bank. They told her when they first locked down the lobby, they said, good news, now you could wear blue jeans, though. And I was like, ah, that's the key. Denim's the key to fighting, you know, COVID. But no, the other thing I'd say is this.
What are your other thoughts, Robert?
Yeah, just real quick. The other thought I have on it is to plug my channel online a little. If you go to Normal America on YouTube, I did a 45-minute video on the model from the Imperial College. This was the model that was used to justify the lockdown in the UK and the United States. That model has so many flaws, it's absurd. But the one I'll talk about here is it said that 500,000 Brits would die if we didn't have a lockdown, but only 20,000 would die if we did. That means 25 times more people would die if we didn't have a lockdown. When we go to Sweden, which didn't have a lockdown, we could see that not only do they not per capita have 25 times as many deaths as the UK, which did one of the strongest lockdowns, but actually the numbers of today per million deaths are the United Kingdom, 469 deaths per million, Sweden, 311. That means that Sweden's doing better than the United Kingdom. The United Kingdom did one of the strictest lockdowns. Sweden did the least restrictive. So what this shows is we were lied to. Why was the default? Even if you give the most charitable explanation, which is, oh, this isn't a matter of corruption. The leaders really did fear the worst case scenario. When did it become acceptable for the default, when we don't know, when our leaders don't know, to be, let's take away people's rights and let's crush the economy? That's should infuriate every single person listening to this.
Okay, so I'm going to give you 2 minutes, and randomly, in no specific order, but the very first thing I want to say is that the virus is real.
Sure.
And no one talks as much trash about individual liberties more than me. But I've been in quarantine since March 6th. Yeah. You know why? Because I had rheumatic fever twice in my life, and I'm a diabetic, and mm-hmm. I'm 61. So, you know, I love civil rights, but thank you. You don't have to tell me anything. I will be responsible for me, because that's what all of this is about. So the virus is real for all you idiots who think that it's a hoax. Okay, you're getting the hoax wrong, number one. You're not as politically tutored as you think that you are. That's not what we're saying, okay, or what people are saying with respect to it being a hoax. The virus is real, okay, unquestionably. But my point about the entire thing, and this is what I was leading Mark Scaringe on, is the following. If you are a leader that's elected and you put your hand on the Bible, and you say that you promise to protect the Constitution, the very first lens that you make every single decision has to be viewed through the lens of the Bill of Rights and the Constitution. So let me give you an example of a yellow light. Everybody knows what a yellow light is, right? So the government in Pennsylvania is telling us that the yellow light, we have to eliminate all our rights and destroy the economy, because when the average Pennsylvania sees a yellow light, that means go faster. When in actuality, the average Pennsylvania, when they see a yellow light, it means caution. And be prepared to stop. And that, in a nutshell, is how they view us. They don't trust us to know what's best for us. And safety, I'm sorry, I apologize. I don't want to hurt your feelings. You're not stupid. I'm not saying it isn't real. But Robert Knorr and Todd Bartley know best how to take care of themselves. They do not need the government to tell them that they have to be socially distanced and quarantined to be able to protect themselves. Robert and Todd know best, and they know what's best for them. You don't have to tell us. And why is a stay-at-home lockdown so much better a strategy to mitigate than social distancing? And one more question. If we're all in it together, what's your contribution?
Right.
I'm talking to you, Governor of you know, Pennsylvania, of Michigan, and the mayor of the city of Chicago, and, you know, the mayor of New York, and the guy that works on CNN that's supposed to have the COVID and is out jogging. What's your contribution if we're in it together? You see, not idiots. We right. just don't believe you. And from a media point of view, which is my specialty, I don't believe you. Here's why. Dr. Fauci. You don't have, who's the head of the CDC, right? You don't have to wear a mask.
NIH.
That's not necessary.
Head of the NIH.
Sorry.
Yes, right.
And then they say, you have to wear a mask. You have to wear a mask. We went from not wearing a mask to wearing a mask. And then on Facebook just yesterday, I saw that he's saying we don't have to wear a mask again. So we went from you don't have to wear a mask to wear a mask to you don't have to wear a mask. I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry. I apologize in advance. I don't believe anything you say.
Right. And real quick on that point of you as an individual know what's best for yourself. I'm not saying I agree with that. And I'm not saying that you won't make mistakes and you might make decisions in your life that in retrospect, you'd say, hey, maybe I should have gone a different path. But you should always default to knowing at least you have your intentions at heart when you make decisions. The people that are in power that are making these decisions for us are people like this. Neil Ferguson, the person who made the Imperial College model, who suggested enforcing these lockdowns and was listened to. He got diagnosed with COVID and 10 days later slept with his mistress, possibly infecting her and her family. We have Cuomo on CNN telling us that it's immoral if you don't follow the lockdown. He got diagnosed with COVID and went outside without a mask to exercise on his bike and then yelled at neighbors that confronted him. We have the mayor of Chicago who shut down hair salons. It was reported that she actually visited a hair salon after she shut it down. Literally, her comment was, yeah, you're right, I did that. I'm the face of fighting this virus in Chicago, and I need to have good-looking hair. Hygiene's important to me. These people don't have your best interest at heart. They don't. They're arrogant. They think they know better than you. And that's why you should always default to trusting you have your interest at heart and your family members' interest at heart more than they do. And real quick, Carlos was saying this earlier. This isn't unprecedented. It's not an unprecedented situation. Our founding fathers outlined the Constitution and the Bill of Rights knowing that unique situations would come up over and over again. And they had the foresight to understand if you follow this blueprint, if you follow this Constitution and Bill of Rights, whatever situation comes to you as a country, this will be the best way to make it out of that situation. And so for us to default to, oh, but this time it's different and we don't know what's up. I know we'll suspend people's Bill of Rights protections. That's utter nonsense. And we can see in real time that it's having the inverse effect of helping people.
They don't trust Pennsylvanians to not go through the yellow light. That's what it is. 2 minutes on Tara Reid and Joe Biden, Todd.
What?
That's prescient. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, my favorite one is the one where President Obama is sitting down next to him and he says, I just endorsed you. And the graphic underneath Biden is, for what?
So you want me to do two? I don't even need to give you two. You can reclaim some of this time. Here's the deal. The Myrtle Beach case in and of itself and the caller, and I can't wait to edit this in its entirety and then post it for part 16 at some point in the very near future, maybe tomorrow, to say that it's none of our business, that everybody knew in Myrtle Beach. Guess what, folks? Everybody knew about Tara Reid. Everybody knew about Joe Biden, right? Yep. But it's okay to let him get a pass because he's on the team that it's okay to be the team on, right?
Right.
He's in a cool kids club.
Exactly right.
He's not right. Justice Kavanaugh. And if I may, and I mean this caringly and lovingly about this show and this program going forward, listen to me very carefully. What Robert Knorr and what Carlos Saldivia and what I will do as a moderator and or guest contributor as the shows go along, listen to us carefully, please. As Carlos mentioned a moment ago, the first lens is your liberty, your ability to walk out of your own freaking house, get in your own car, do what you want to do with your life because we live in the greatest country on the planet with the greatest freedoms. And they've been summarily taken away.
Right. Be trusted to do so.
So.
And be trusted to do so.
Correct.
Right.
So you're responsible for you. I had a dear friend who I invited to like the show. and they said something on social media earlier today that maybe they wouldn't be liking the show. That's fine, but at least you have the opportunity to like it or not like it. And we want you to participate.
Exactly.
It's okay to have a different opinion.
Exactly.
That's what makes this whole thing great. And I have the greatest respect for that person in the world. I'm so glad they said what they said on social media because it was a perfect example of our country and how great it is. Because in other places, you say exactly what that person said, you're not going to be heard from tomorrow. You won't be.
12:55, 2 minutes, Robert.
Yeah, just real quick, my thought on Tara Reid and that situation is, I had said when the Kavanaugh situation happened that to me, that was when the worm turned where, even though I'm a conservative and I'm a Republican, that's when I could never vote for a Democrat, even if it was at a local level and someone that was like, eh, they're a decent Democrat. Because what they did was, this country is the greatest country in the world because it's founded on the principle of personal freedom and personal responsibility. And we were the first country, our founding fathers was the first country. We didn't look at it as a collective. We said, if we give people freedom and responsibility, that will make the country better as a whole. The legal precipice of that and the logical extension is the concept of innocent until proven guilty. When the Democrats sought to overturn that, I could see the future that not only would that destroy our politics because it would just become who could make the most sexual assault allegations, but it would actually destroy the country because it would lead to a fear-mongering idea where innocent people were charged either in the court of public opinion or legally, and that was not sustainable and could destroy our country. What we see is that I was proven right, and it wasn't just me, a bunch of people that knew that the Kavanaugh situation was just politics. We now know through the Tara Reid situation, which I'm going to be someone who's not a hypocrite and say, I'm giving Biden the benefit of the doubt that he's innocent until proven guilty. I'm not going to vote against Biden based on these allegations. I'm going to vote against Biden based on a bunch of other stuff, but these allegations won't factor into it. But we're not talking about my standard. We're talking about Joe Biden's standard. We're talking about the standard of the people that sought to tear Kavanaugh down. And that standard was believe all women, guilty until proven innocent. And the fact that they are now admitting, well, it's really just about do we like this person or not. Not only is that a disservice to Kavanaugh and all people who've been falsely accused, or even if not falsely accused, just judged guilty before they had the chance to defend themselves, and to the family members of those people. But this is a slap in the face to every victim of sexual assault that's ever had to live through the pain of what happened to them, to see their experience trivialized in a cheap attempt to get political points. So that's what I feel about the terror.
So 12:57, let me do a minute on Biden.
Who?
Due process. The subject is due process. Again, we go back to the Bill of Rights. Due process. It must be there for Joe Biden, and it must be there for Justice Kavanaugh. And it wasn't. You decide why that was. Now, I want to make sure that everyone understands that Dr. Blasey Ford and Tara Reid are voices that we must hear, okay? Except that the Democrats hear Tara Reid, they just don't believe her, okay, for political gain. Due process comes first, not what your political ideology is. Due process comes first. So I have problems with both gals. I have problems with them. But there is corroborating evidence for Tara Reid's case, and there isn't for Dr. Blasey. Okay, but here's the question, and it was significant when Megyn Kelly asked in the interview just day before yesterday, asked Tara Reid, would you be willing to take a lie detector test? And Tara Reid says, I'm not a criminal. Why should I take one? It should be Joe Biden's who should be taking one. But if Joe Biden takes one, I will. But if Joe Biden takes one and I will and I pass and he fails, then what happens? You see, that's why we need the guidelines of the Constitution first. And that's my point in having this entire show. The Constitution and the Bill of Rights first. And I will try to persuade you with real good examples of how that can enrich your life. If you guys listen every week at 11 a.m. every weekend at 11 a.m. on Saturday, because that is the only lens that we will be looking at these stories through.
And real quick, I'll just say, when it comes to the COVID stuff, ask your leaders and your media people and the people that are talking about this, who defended liberty when it wasn't popular? Who defended it when they were being told, oh,
nobody.
We want people to die? And then who were the Johnny-come-latelys that after public opinion turned said, oh, now we're concerned
right. about rights? But, and they needed that public opinion to be able to embolden themselves to say, we're going to resist now. But nobody. Yep. I was taking count. We were taking count. Like more than a month ago. Mm-hmm. To you, Todd.
I've wanted to do this type of show for eons. And people ask me, they're like, well, you're just a sports guy and play-by-play guy. Are you really? Thanks for defining my career for me. The last...
You hardly know me.
the last 10, 12 weeks have taken me back to the beginning of my career again, with reporting in real time, with the updates and the daily numbers, and just absolutely, you know, bringing the lunch pail every day to ask those questions of those leaders that are making themselves available to answer those questions, and to watch some other local media outlets here locally basically punt, well, you know, we'll just get it from the Associated Press, we'll get it from here, we'll get it from there, and then just copy and paste it. That's what we'll do as a so-called media outlet that's been here since 18, whatever. Oh, by the way, are you publishing tomorrow? Not tomorrow, just checking. Maybe that's an indication right. of what this community and how this community feels about how you've reported the news since 18, whatever it was. Let me give you one other thought
right.
on what's going on and tie it back to the Penn State thing. Do you remember the guy that was in the chair at Penn State when the whole scandal hit and signed the NCAA decree? Do you remember his name? It was President Rodney Erickson. Rodney Erickson had one foot out the door ready to retire when that thing hit. They name him as an interim president. He signs off on the NCAA penalties, which then, of course, were lifted as we know all the history. What was in it for Rodney Erickson to not sign that document? Let me juxtapose that against Governor Wolf, who's not running for re-election. He's term limited. What's in it for Governor Wolf not to lock the state down? What are you going to do, vote him out of office?
Yep. Right.
He has nothing to lose. Nothing to lose.
No consequence.
When you right. use those things as the background and the backdrop, again, you're not going to read it in the paper, probably not going to hear it other places or see it other places. That's the perspective you're getting right here on Pennsylvania Patriots Radio each and every Saturday from 11 to 1. And another Patriot as well is coming up at 1 o'clock in Mark Scaringi. Do you want to know what his stripes are? He's fighting the fight all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yep.
Thank you Absolutely. For allowing us to make a contribution, Todd.
Keep up the good fight, as Mike Gallagher likes to say.
Thanks so much. Yep.
Gentlemen, until next Saturday, that's Pennsylvania Patriots Radio here on News Talk 104.1 and 1600 WEJS.
Thank you for listening to today's show. For updates, follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Pennsylvania Patriots Radio. Make sure you catch the podcast of the show on TalkWilliamsport.com. Join us next Saturday at 11 a.m. for Pennsylvania Patriots Radio right here on News Talk 104.1.